honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our fascinating visit with 100-year-old Pearl Harbor survivor Geb Galley of Moses Lake, Washington. You heard his memories from December 7th, 1941, aboard the battleship USS Nevada at Pearl Harbor. And after that devastating day, they didn't let you come home or anything, right? They just moved you right to that cruiser?
Oh, no. I was transferred over onto a cruiser. And then we went out to intercept the enemy.
Well, and yeah, the Northampton saw a lot of history. You guys were in the group escorting the Hornet, I believe, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. She's seen a lot of action.
So the Doolittle Raid, you guys were there alongside the Hornet?
Yeah.
And then when the Hornet was sunk, Battle of Santa Cruz Islands, you guys were there?
That's right.
And then you got sunk?
Yeah, that's right. So the thing is, all these things happened, you know. It was part of your job. You were aboard that ship, and you were aboard that ship to protect and help elude the enemy.
So you told me what your job on the Nevada was, but now you're not on a battleship anymore. You're on a cruiser, the Northampton. Yeah. So what was your duty on that ship?
Same as on the Nevada, in Federation. And the thing was, I had the choice duty. See, we had a soda fountain aboard ship, too. We'd go up and get an ice cream cone or soda and stuff like that. We called it a gee-dunk. And that was my job to take care of that equipment. And matter of fact, I was the only guy aboard ship that was able to take care of it, too.
So you were the most important guy on the ship.
That's right. Amen to that.
If you didn't do your job, you had a lot of unhappy sailors. So 5 months after Pearl Harbor, they're going to try something that's never been tried before. They're flying bombers off of an aircraft carrier, the USS Hornet, and all these B-25s take off. You weren't on the Hornet, but you're on the Northampton as part of that group. Were you aware of what was happening there?
No, see, I knew that they were going to take off and try to bomb Japan.
And you heard about it at the time while it was going on?
You see the planes taking off from the carrier. But what the actual mission was, we didn't know.
So tell me about that. You're one of a handful of guys who are still alive that actually saw with your own eyes those B-25s taking off. And that was a risky takeoff. They didn't know if it was going to work. So what did you see?
Well, as a matter of fact, we were supposed to get a day closer, but in the meantime, they spotted a fishing boat way across the horizon, and they didn't know if they had radio contact with the home base or not. So they made the decision that they had contact and they could send out enemy planes from the home base, so they had to launch our planes the day before, and we happened to have happened to hit rough seas too. So they had kind of a rough time for taking off. So what they had to do, as the ship was going back and down, they tried to get those planes to take off from the far end of the carrier and get to the end. It was on the upward swing. Well, a couple of times it caught on the downward swing. And I still say to this day, those couple of planes, the wheels touched the water. Because you know, we were standing, come on, get up there.
So, where are you on your ship watching that?
Topside.
And so you got a bunch of your buddies around there? And this, I mean, we all watch these sporting events or these movies, and we're rooting for something to happen because we don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. And it kind of sounds like that's where you guys were. You didn't know if they were going to make it or not.
Well, that's right. I mean, all we knew is see what was going on, you know. Uh-huh. We knew that these planes, B-25s, were heavily loaded with ammunition, and we were hoping that they'd take it off and get over there. Drop the load, then go over to China someplace where they'd be picked up.
So it probably was a long time before you knew the results of that.
That's right, yeah. We got some feedback that they were picked up. I think a couple of guys got lost, but they were later captured and took them in and they saved them.
One more question about that, because I'm trying to picture myself in your shoes watching that. Like you said, you think a couple of them touched the water. When they actually made it and you see them disappearing on the horizon or you'd see that they're safe, is that something where there's a cheer going up on your ship?
No, we just watched what was going on. We knew what was happening, so all you do in your own mind, we just stand on top side and say, oh, are you proven? Hoop and Howell and stuff like that, which in his own mind, he probably even said a prayer to say, hope the hell you make it.
Well, and those pilots and crew members were saying prayers too. And, you know, the famous story is that Doolittle presumed it was a failure and that he might even be court-martialed when he got back. He didn't realize the impact of it, but the headlines are saying, you know, U.S. strikes Tokyo, and people in America feel that that was a big morale boost. What about for you guys? Did it mean something to you when you heard they were actually able to hit Tokyo?
We really didn't get the feedback until much later. So we just hoped that the main thing, what they were after, the industrial areas.
Yeah.
They weren't after the people, they were after the industrial areas. We just hoped the hell they locked out a bunch of manufacturing plants so that they couldn't manufacture a lot of this stuff anymore.
And so you guys stayed with that group, with the Hornet and the Enterprise. I'm wondering for you, how significant was the threat of submarines or being hit by the enemy? Was that something you thought about a lot?
We knew there was enemy submarines in the territory. We had to be very suspicious and alert for submarines. We got hit by one, so I mean, that's war.
Well, and before you got hit, the Hornet gets hit. So at the Battle of Santa Cruz Islands, and I've talked to some guys who were on the Hornet and ended up in the water that day.
We took in the toll, and then, of course, I mean, we got enemy approaching us, so we got cut loose. So we couldn't stay tied to us, so we cannot maneuver and dodge aerial planes.
So the Hornet is hit at the Battle of Santa Cruz Islands. It's debilitated, so you guys put a line on it, you're towing it, but you make yourselves vulnerable.
We got loose, and then, of course, when she went down, we picked up some of the survivors.
What did you personally have to do during that operation?
I could not be on topside. I stayed down below deck. I was in charge of the refrigeration department, make sure that equipment kept running all the time. But I go up on topside every once in a while and see what was going on. When we did our travels after later on, my mother and I, we were traveling. I ran into a guy down in California. He had a bunch of tattoos on his arms. I made a comment. I said, U.S. Navy? He said, yeah. He said, so what were you on? And he said, the Hornet. Yeah. I said, you took you guys in tow. And he said, what were you? I said, Northampton. Well, you're the guys that picked me up. I mean, years later, I ran into guys that were in the same conditions as you were.
So you've seen, I mean, your ship at Pearl Harbor is hit. Now you've seen the Hornet hit. Are you starting to wonder if your ship is going to make it or not?
Question mark.
Who knows, huh?
Yeah, there was, we were towing the Hornet, the Japanese torpedo plane, and it made its run. They came up between us and the Hornet. They were, I would say, from here to the cabinet. I mean, they were that close.
Like 20 feet?
Yeah. I could see the white of their eyes.
Wow.
And they were smiling.
Were you smiling?
Well, I probably gave it a toothpaste smile.
That's why you guys had to cut them loose, because you were too vulnerable.
The torpedo that they dropped, they got the Hornet or not, I don't know. I assume they did. And, of course, we had to cut loose so we could stay tied to the Hornet, because we were dead in the water. We were a perfect target because we were dead in the water.
But it would only be a matter of time till your ship's number came up too. So a few months later, Battle of Tassafrongas. Where were you when that all went down? And what do you remember about when your ship was sunk, the Northampton?
We were hit, and of course, matter of fact, I was down in that refrigeration room, and of course we got jolted, and of course all the lights went off. And then, of course, you got your emergency lights that come on automatically. So then, of course, I went up on the topside. There was after part of your ship, the level there would have been the second deck down. And from there on, you went down into the after steering. And in the after steering, you had to open up a hatch to go down into the steering. There was usually 2 to 4 guys who was stationed there doing general quarters. I was going to open it up, and an officer came by and said, you leave that hatch shut. But I said, there's 4 guys on there. These are leave it shut for watertight integrity. You don't disobey orders. So being I had stood watches down there, and it was an eerie feeling because you had no way to escape. When he left, I went up the topside, and I couldn't see him anymore. I went back down there, and I went and opened up the hatch, and I said, come on, you guys, get the hell out of there, and then that equipment can run by itself. I slammed the hatch down, buckled it down. Otherwise, those guys would have went down with the ship.
Yeah. You just said that like that's no big deal, but that is such a significant thing. So you were ordered, and I've talked to other guys on other ships who had those orders. So you're ordered not to touch that hatch because this officer thinks it would make the ship vulnerable. But you knew there are four guys down there who wouldn't make it home to their families if you obeyed that order. How hard was that to make that decision? What made that decision for you? It was just like a snap of a finger. You weren't going to let those guys die.
You made snap decisions. At that. Yeah. Under those conditions, things happen so fast, you got to make those snap decisions and hope you're doing the right thing.
And did you know those guys?
Well, the thing was, I didn't really know how badly we were hit, but I had stood watching down there, and it was like to be down there and could not escape. And they were down there only in case an emergency, in case the equipment faltered, and they had operated manually. So I done my little thing.
Did those guys have anything to say to you?
They got up and got the hell out of there, and I never seen him again.
I bet they were pretty thankful for you to be there.
Well, the thing is, you have to do your thing, spare the moment. You see what has to be done, and you do it, and that's it. And forget about it.
And did that officer ever find out that you disobeyed his order?
Yeah, he was gone. I could care less.
So it sounds like the decision for you, I know you said you made it in an instant, but it sounds like you thought, if that were me in there, I would want someone to open the hatch.
I used to have a stand watch down there. I kind of felt the eerie feeling you were locked down there. There's no way you could escape unless somebody else opened that hatch. And so being we were under a possible sinking condition, so I went down and opened up the hatch to the bottom there because that equipment could run myself.
But you weren't out of the woods yet. What happened after that?
After I went up the top side, went over and fantailed. I looked over the side, and there was always some guys on the raft. And they hollered at me, "Hey, come on, Gally, get off of here. We're hit." So I looked around and I jumped over the side and went down and I hung onto that raft.
How far down was that?
Oh, probably the height of the ceiling, or that higher.
It was already pretty low in the water?
Yeah.
So how long were you on that raft?
Well, that was at night. All that night and all the next day, and the following day, we were picked up by a PT boat.
A very famous PT boat. But again, you say that like that's no big deal. But it's nighttime. It's dark. You don't know if the enemy's around. You don't know if you're going to get picked up. How many guys were on that raft with you?
About half a dozen guys.
What'd you guys talk about?
What are you talking about? In the middle of the ocean and on the raft, water all around you. Trying to make some kind of decision, what shall we do? Because let's start paddling. And then we see the island off in the distance, so we started paddling toward that island. When we got over toward that island, we drew fire. So about face, get out of there.
Is this an inflatable raft?
Yeah, O-shaped, yeah. With a little grate in the center.
And how about sharks? Were there any sharks in the area?
Yeah. Nice boy. It was a moonlight night, and you could see the fish swimming right alongside. It just schools them. And there's fish in there, you did this long, but you don't know what kind they were. Mm-hmm. But I thought I reached over and touched them if I wanted to. I can see them swimming right alongside of us.
And did you guys have any food or water?
That's the last thing you think about. Think about saving your butt.
So sun comes up the next day. You still don't know what's going to happen.
You go out there and you float around out in the ocean there, and hoping that somebody can come out and find you. After we were floating around for the rest of that night, and the next day we pedaled back toward where the ship was. We seen the ship going down. The bow was sticking out of the water. But there was another ship there taking on the survivors.
So then you knew you'd be picked up too?
That's right. No, we weren't picked up there. We were picked up the following day. They knew we were safe on a raft and stuff like that. So they sent a PT boat to pick us up.
You saw a plane fly over and that gave you a little hope?
Yeah, he flew over. I mean, dipped down. Then we knew he was ready to give us our position. It was sometime later, a PT boat come out and picked us up.
Can I ask you a really dumb question?
Sure.
Were you scared?
That is a dumb question. What the hell would you do if some guy stood there and pointed a gun at you?
I'd be scared.
What can I say?
It's a pretty helpless situation, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. That's right, yeah. So like I say, your mind, when you're under those conditions, your mind wanders, try to analyze what's around, what are you going to have to do to survive.
And I have I've talked to a lot of guys who went through the sinking of the Indianapolis, a cruiser just like yours, but nobody knew they were down and they were in the water for days. And some guys would drink salt water and hallucinate. Other guys were eaten by sharks. Some guys gave up. What do you think helped you guys survive and endure when you didn't know when your rescue was coming?
The individual is different. It depends on what frame of mind that he, she would say, lives under. What can he personally do and has to do to survive? You have to take in consideration what's around you and what's happening. What can you do to stay alive? You're drawing all kinds of conclusions. You should have done this, you should have done that, and so on and so forth. And if I had done this, this wouldn't have happened, you know. Right. I mean, there's a lot of iffies there.
So you spent 2 days on the raft before you got picked up?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth. I'm just curious what it was like. Is that something where you talked about, you know, going to church Sunday morning, December 7th. You never made it there because of what happened. I know you're involved in your church here. Is that something where you say a prayer or you're believing that something is coming? What are the thoughts that go through your mind as those hours and hours and hours go by and your rescue hasn't come yet?
You'd be surprised what goes through that mind of yours when you're out in no man's land there and you're out there by yourself. You know in your own mind what you're going to have to do to survive, to keep your nose above that water. We had some young kids on there, and they were scared out of their mind. I mean, trying to simmer them down and tell them it's okay and stuff like that. We had guys that they had to pee. You pee your pants. They couldn't. We had to take him out of the water, set him on their shoulder, so he take a pee. The guys that had a hard time swimming, stuff like that, we put them in the raft. The guys we knew how to swim, we just hung on the outside. So do things what each guy was capable of handling. It's hard for you to visualize if you're not out there.
Well, and that's why I'm asking so many questions.
Those are hard things to answer. You never know what you're going to do. It's a matter of seconds sometimes what you have to do.
So when you see that PT boat coming your way, what did that feel like when you saw it on the horizon?
Hallelujah. Yes.
Sounds like that was one of the better days of your life, maybe.
What day is the best day of your life? You can answer that just as well as I can.
At age 100, he has not lost his sense of humor, nor his unique spirit. If you'd like to hear more of Geb Galley's memories, the podcast version of this episode at hometownheroesradio.com includes some more stories that would not quite fit into our radio time today. You talk about resilient. Boy, did he go through a lot during World War II, and not to mention all the years since. Thank you so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at ProvidentPayments.com.